Good day, South Dakota, and welcome to Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. I'm your host, Kent Osborne. On today's program, we'll discuss the latest in tech news. SQL Saturday proponent Joshua Warren joins us for a discussion of the upcoming Sioux Falls event. We'll update you on the first automobile death involving Tesla's autopilot and a warning about ATM scammers for you as you go about your summer travels. Plus, your calls, texts, emails, and Facebook posts. We'd love to hear from you. Send your questions via email midday@sdpb.org or send a tweet to @sdpb. Join the discussion on our Facebook page at facebook.com/techradio or call now 800-524-3604. You can email your suggestions or questions to our guest today, Mac Guru Joel Brovelite and Exigent Solutions Security Officer Amos Asop. That's all today on Tech Radio.
This is SDPB News. I'm Gary Lindbolt. Numbers from a monthly survey of Midwest and Plains state supply managers were lower in June, but still suggest economic growth over the next 6 months. The Mid-American Business Conditions Index from Creighton University reached 50.1 in June. That's down from May's number, but still above growth neutral. Creighton economics professor Ernie Goss says gains from non-durable goods producers helped offset continuing losses for regional durable goods manufacturers. Supply managers in South Dakota, Nebraska, Minnesota, Iowa, and five other states are part of the monthly survey. July 1st brings a new fiscal year in South Dakota state government, and with it, many new laws take effect. Insurance companies may now get an 80% tax credit for contributing to a grant organization to help lower-income students pay private school tuition. The state now bans most abortions beyond 19 weeks of pregnancy, though there are exceptions for medical emergencies. Another law forbids the sale of fetal tissue in South Dakota. Starting today, a share of alcohol tax revenue will go to the state's 66 counties. Officials in many counties say they're spending more funds on court and jail-related expenses. Fireworks are on sale in South Dakota as the holiday weekend begins. The Sioux Falls Fire Department is using demonstrations to show what can happen when safety isn't used with sparklers and artillery fireworks. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Aaron Myros reports.
A small watermelon is roughly the size of a human head. Sioux Falls fire officials use this comparison when demonstrating what can happen to a person who gets too close to an over-the-counter artillery shell firework. Tyler Churchma is a fire inspector. He sets a watermelon next to the firework, lights the fuse, and quickly backs away. After a shower of red sparks, what's left is pieces of watermelon scattered across the field. Churchma says sometimes when a firework doesn't go off, people get too close, assuming the fuse has gone out or it's a dud.
And then we'll go back out there and look down the tube, and sometimes it could still be burning and it could go off right when you're checking that tube. And you can see the effects that it has when it first came out. The launching component took out the watermelon, but then also the other component of the actual firework shot off afterwards about 5 feet off the ground.
Churchma says all fireworks can be dangerous, even smaller ones like sparklers.
Everybody thinks they're really safe, and we always give them to the young children to use. Sparklers burn at about 1,200 degrees, and your skin will burn about 140 to get your first degree burns.
After shooting off fireworks, officials recommend placing them in water. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Erin Myros in Sioux Falls.
And the state's flagship university is not in a hurry to implement beer and wine sales for special events. Today is the first day such sales are allowed on the 6 state public campuses. Thursday, the Board of Regents approved rules that govern the sale of beer and wine. It allows but doesn't require the sales. The policy also requires controlled access to the spirits and restricts beverage sales to premium seating at student athletic events. Previous state law did not forbid alcohol, but on-campus sales were not allowed until a measure approving them was approved in this year's legislative session. South Dakota weather for the rest of this Friday, partly to mostly cloudy with a chance of thunderstorms in the west. Highs in the 70s. Partly cloudy tonight, a chance of showers and thunderstorms south, lows in the 50s. On Saturday, partly cloudy with a chance of thunderstorms in the extreme south and the Black Hills. Highs in the upper 70s to mid 80s. For SDPB News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt. Tech Radio next with the Computer Guys on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
And welcome back to Tech Radio, featuring the Computer Guys here on member-supported SDPB Radio. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today and answer questions you might have in that field. In the studios of KCSD in Sioux Falls today, Mac guru Joel Brovelite is here. Hello, Joel.
Hey.
It's great to have you. Also, Exigent Solutions Security Officer Amos Aesop is here. Amos, how are you?
Good, how are you?
It's great to have a security officer in the building.
I
feel good.
Maybe a different security officer.
Okay.
Not armed.
Okay, that we know of. You can call, text, tweet, or email your questions today, or simply swing by our Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. Post your questions or comments there. Don't be shy. Our phone number, 800-524-3604. That's 800-524-3604. At SDPB is our Twitter handle, and the email address, of course, midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, midday at sdpb.org. First up, guys, we've got a guest for the show. He was on last year talking about SQL Saturday. Joshua Warren is with us today. Josh is the founder of the 605 SQL User Group, which puts on SQL Saturday, and he's also a business analyst at First Bank and Trust. SQL Saturday, of course, is the free training event for SQL Server professionals and those wanting to learn about SQL Server. It's held on July 23rd this year, 2016, at the University Center, and we want to bring Josh on today and talk a little bit about that. Hello, Josh.
Hey, how's it going, Ken?
Great. Welcome back to Tech Radio.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate the help getting the word out about that.
Absolutely. It's a little bit later this month, so it gives folks time to plan. What exciting things are you bringing us this year?
Well, this year we're excited. We have a little bit bigger event. One of the things people asked for last year was more choices on sessions and topics and speakers. So this year we were able to bring in 16 speakers. And we'll have 18 different sessions. So throughout the day, any given person could go to about 6 different sessions to learn about maybe database development, architecture, enterprise development, and even some personal development topics that we have for people looking to grow their careers. So we're really excited about what's coming in.
That's fantastic. Are these based for, I guess, all levels of expertise in the field, at the beginner to the pro, or is it more streamlined for moderate users?
Yeah, it's pretty much the topics are ordered beginner, intermediate, advanced. We have a variety of topics available, but we even find with our beginner level topics, there's usually one or two things that everybody takes away from that session because, you know, we all work in different environments and different industries and we're solving different problems, so usually even when we're at a beginner topic, the speaker gives us some insights into something we just haven't thought about before. So there's vast opportunities to learn. And the other learning opportunity really comes from networking. The ability to be in a room with 100 different SQL Server professionals and talk about the problems you're trying to work around at work and the opportunities that you have to learn and even talk about the systems and additional softwares that you use to supplement your SQL Server software. It's just a great way to share information and build relationships.
Yeah, that's an important thing, especially for the younger folks or maybe some people new to the area. I was looking over the web page. Let's just give that out. SQL Saturday, it's sqlsaturday.com is sort of the national page. If you search for, I guess, Sioux Falls there, you'll come up with the page that lists out the breakouts and the agendas and things. But I was on the webpage and I noticed, quite a few names I recognized as far as sponsors go. So it looks like you've picked up, quite a bit of sponsorship, which is wonderful. I noticed, Dakota State, DSU, is one of those sponsors. Do you find a lot of students coming to this?
Well, last year we had a few students come to the event, but it's something we're really trying to push this year is to get more students from Dakota State and SDSU and USD. We host the event at the University Center, so we have a great connection there, but also Southeast Tech and Sioux Falls. This is a great opportunity for students to come meet people who do their, you know, to do data professional for the career they've been involved for 10, 15 years, ask questions. And some of the companies that we have, like you said, are local, CHR Solutions, DocuTap, Sanford Health, Omnitech, SDN Communications. This is a great time to connect with these companies and potentially talk about a future career and what opportunities there may be there for them. So there's lots of opportunities, whether you're learning or networking or just getting into the industry, as you said, as a beginner, as well as new to the area, that you could take something away from this event. And it's free, so really the only thing you're investing is your time.
Yeah, it's free to those who register, correct?
Correct.
It's the right price point.
Registration the day of, but we really encourage you to register ahead of time because it will really speed up the process. And you'll get a speed pass, and you'll get an opportunity to give each vendor a raffle ticket and possibly win a prize. And all raffle prizes are worth $100 and more. So last year we had a Microsoft Surface given out. We had an iPad given out. We had a GoPro given out. So there's some pretty great things to win, as well as the information that you're going to get. This is all because of what the sponsors show up and do for us to allow us to offer this free training to data professionals in the Sioux Falls area.
Yeah, I've found over the years there are no door prizes quite like those at tech conferences. So, Joshua, thanks so much for your time today. You want to hit us one more time? Give us the web address and the times and dates of this thing.
Yeah, so the SQL Saturday is July 23rd at the University Center in Sioux Falls. The best way to find the event is to just Google SQL Saturday Sioux Falls or go to sqlsaturday.com and search for Sioux Falls. And then all the registration will be on the event site there, along with the schedule that we have set up.
Sure. What about the 605 SQL user group? When do they usually meet?
Yeah, thanks for asking. The 605 SQL user group usually meets the second Tuesday of the month from 5:30 to 7. And we move our meeting around depending on who is the host. And really, the easiest way to find our website there is 605 SQL Saturday. Or you can email 605sqlusergroup@sqlpass.org and get more information.
Great. Thanks so much for your time today. We'll definitely put this information up on the Facebook page so that if people want to come back later after the show, they can easily get that.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Kent.
Thank you so much for your time today, Joshua. That was Joshua Warren. He is the founder of the 605 SQL User Group and helps put on SQL Saturday coming up on a Saturday in July 23rd here in Sioux Falls at the University Center. Moving on to more of the show. Joel, I see you've set some things on the desk here, and I take it you've bought some new tech.
Yeah.
Well, let's get you turned up, though.
There we go. Yeah, I just happened to bring in my, if you've listened to me talk about the Amazon Echo, which is the device that listens to you and allows you to ask questions, turn on home devices like lights or turn off connected devices, ask about the weather, play music, order products off of Amazon. They now have a mobile version. Actually, they've had it out for a while, but I'm just bringing mine in now, called the Amazon Echo Tap. And it's quite a bit smaller if you've seen the Amazon Echo. The Amazon Echo's kind of about 50%, again, larger than a Pringles can. And this is much more akin to, say, one of those energy drink cans, you know, one of the
sure.
large.
Yep.
So pretty good size, but not near as big. And this one runs off battery. And I've been using it for a few weeks, and I really like it. Although, one of the big differences, other than running on battery, is you have to press the button to activate it. It doesn't listen 24/7, which doesn't seem like a big deal. But when you're across the room and you want to set a timer, which is something I use my Echo all the time for, you can't do that. You have to walk over to it and press the button. So I find it slightly less useful, but as far as a portable speaker and being able to access the functions that the Echo has, it's really nice because I can take it out in the backyard on the deck by the hot tub, and I can listen to music that way or whatever I want to do. And it's pretty loud. I don't have it hooked up to Wi-Fi, so we can't do an on-the-air test. But and then something I didn't bring in, which I actually just got yesterday, was the Amazon Echo Dot, which is kind of the reverse of this. It's not battery powered, but it doesn't have the integrated, you know, high quality speaker. It has just a very small speaker, but allows you to line out to any speaker system that you have, and it's about half the price of the maybe less than half the price of the Amazon Echo, but has all the same functionality, including the listening 24/7. So
I've got a pair of like a Bose speakers I could plug into there.
Absolutely, yeah.
The powered ones, that would sound great.
Yep.
And this listens all the time though.
It listens all the time. Yeah, it only really becomes a problem if you've got music, you know, super loud. Obviously, it's not going to be able to hear you say, "Alexa, set the volume to level 5," which is something you can do, and I find myself using all the time if I'm listening to public radio, which I do all the time on all of my Amazon Echo devices. I might want to listen to a story a little closer, so I'll just say, "Alexa, volume level 5," and that'll turn it up from 3. And I know you've got one of these. I don't know if you use it as much as I do. You can't see me motion to Amos on the radio.
I do have one. I don't use it as much as I had hoped to. I probably get the most use out of it when new people come over to kind of demonstrate what it can do. I also don't have the home automation features that you have.
Yeah,
I'm still dragging my feet on that, and I really need to get there.
One of the things I did, we have a kind of a strange old house that was built the turn of last century, so it's a really old house, and we have this kind of Bezoar growth addition on it, which houses the master bedroom that my wife and I sleep in, and because of that, the ductwork doesn't go there very well, so we have a couple of fans on in the back room pretty much all the time when they're in there asleep, and that keeps it relatively cool. But sometimes, you know, you want to turn those down. Like if you want to watch a video or something, the fans are going, they're kind of loud. So I went and picked up a couple of I think they're Belkin, Wemo, automated switches. And basically you just plug it into the wall and then you plug your device into it. And you can remotely turn on and off those outlets, whatever you have plugged into them, which sounds great. It's even greater when you have Amazon Echo, because you can just say, "Amazon, turn the fans off," and it will turn both of my fans off. I don't have to get up and turn them off, and I don't have to get up and turn them on. It's brilliant, and I think those little outlet things are around 30-40 bucks, which sounds like a lot, but you know, you can also turn them off remotely from wherever you are. So if you forget to turn your fans on or whatever it is you have plugged into it, you can do it from, you know, wherever you are. So I find them really useful. So
you know,
that's another thing I've used them for.
And useful in other areas too, where you know you can program them so that things
of
come
course.
On at
it comes
particular
on automatically,
time.
Yeah.
You can integrate those with the if this then that recipe book, where if something happens, maybe your garage door opens, right?
Or if the outside temperature gets above 80 degrees,
sure.
You can have the fans kick on.
Have the fans kick on, right? That's a great example there. So there's a lot of interactivity, more than just on-off.
Of course,
but
yeah.
But on-off based on conditions happening, not just me sick. Because to be real honest, when I sit back and I listen and we say we can tell the fans to shut themselves off,
it doesn't sound that useful.
It doesn't sound like it's worth 40 bucks.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but,
or 80 bucks in that case,
right,
because
exactly.
I haven't hooked up to
but
two
the,
of them.
But the automation portions is where it really comes in and where it really starts to shine. So,
excellent. So that was the Echo Tap.
Echo Tap,
and
yeah.
And I think you answered I came up with a question of why battery-powered, and is this designed to take with you?
Yeah, you can take it with you. You know, they have a little, this doesn't have like a handle or anything, but they sell for, of course, $20 extra. You can buy this rubberized thing with a handle that you can, you know, clip it onto a bag or whatever it is. And it's pretty sturdy. So you could, instead of hooking it up to your home Wi-Fi, you could hook it up to, say, your phone's mobile hotspot. And then you could have Amazon wherever you went, which I haven't done other than just to test it to see if it worked, which it does. I could find that really useful if I was the type of person that commuted from work to office. Because one thing that I don't use a lot, but I think a lot of people would, is you can tell it to add things to your shopping list. Like you could say, "Oh, add you know, butter to my list, add milk to my shopping list, or add you know, an Amazon Echo Dot to my shopping list," or whatever it is, and it will keep this kind of online shopping list that you can access for your mobile device. or you can access just by asking what's on my shopping list. So I find I haven't used that, but I think that would be useful for somebody that, you know, maybe doesn't use lists on their phones, or they think of something while they're, you know, in one room and you don't have your phone with you and you just tell it into it. It has a lot of little functions like that. You can ask for sports scores. Not something I ask a lot, but if you asked it, you know, what was the Lynx score last night, it would tell you. So there's lots of functions even I don't use that I think a lot of people could use. And the mobile version of that I think would be really useful for, like, college student or, like I said, somebody who commutes a lot.
Well, as we become more and more dependent on search engines and Google and other things to answer questions that we should probably already know, or maybe we'd normally go to a book and look up, having a portable version for people who, you know, I know probably most campgrounds in the state that probably don't have great, either absolutely don't have Wi-Fi, but probably don't have great cell reception. But if you found yourself in a place, say going camping for a few weeks, or just going to, you know, Phoenix or wherever, you're going somewhere in your camper, yeah, this could go along with you.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
And
you can check the weather on it. That's something my wife does a lot, asks what the weather is. It'll do that. Now, of course, your phone will do that too, but it's different when you're brushing your teeth and you take the toothbrush out of your mouth and you ask what the weather is. You put it back in. You don't have to – your hands are free. If you're cooking or something, your hands are wet, you can just ask a question or tell it to set a timer. I've used that a ton in the kitchen. I've set a timer for half an hour. And then you can set a secondary timer for 20 minutes. You know, it's just, you don't have to get that phone out. And you don't even have to, press the button to use voice connect. I have to say, I use the voice command for the Echo way more than I use for Siri. And I use the one for Siri a lot when I'm away.
Yeah.
I kind of wish it was as good on Apple as it is for Amazon. And that's saying a lot coming from me.
I like the option of the dot without the speaker because, to be honest with you, the speaker was the one thing that was kind of holding me back because I know it's, you say it's high quality.
Oh, it's
everybody,
really high quality.
Everybody says it's really high quality. I still think I want my Bose.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's
more
high quality for the size.
For the size.
Of what
yeah,
it
of course, it's not your home stereo.
So this is actually very appealing to me.
Yeah.
And I'll have to maybe try that out. It's time for a break. We need to take a short break. When we come back, we have an email question from Scott in Blackhawk about Windows 10. And then we're going to move on to more things, Tesla and Android and HP battery recalls and just kind of a bunch of news of the day. But we'll get to all that after this. And welcome back to Tech Radio on this wonderful, beautiful July 1st. I can't believe it's July, but here we go. Welcome back. We have gathered in the studios of KCSD here in Sioux Falls. Matt Guru, Joel Brovelite is here, and Exigent Solutions Security Officer Amos Aesop as well, here to take your calls, your tweets, your emails, however you'd like to communicate with us. And we have an email, gentlemen, and Scott from Blackhawk, he says, without my permission, the boss clicked on the Windows 10 upgrade. Our computer hasn't been the same. I spent hours trying to get our HP printer to scan, and I generally hate it. Is there any hope for someone who would like to return to our previous version, Windows 8? Amos, tell us about rolling back a computer from Windows 10 to Windows 8.
So, you know, this is it's kind of a loaded question right there. So it is possible to go back. In fact, Microsoft keeps all of the Windows, the previous Windows versions, whether it's 7 or 8. I believe it's for 30 days. I think that's still the case, just in case you do want to go back. And there, it's, you know, because there are going to be issues that Microsoft didn't foresee where Windows 10 doesn't work out as well as it does maybe for some other people. That being said, the actual Windows 10 is eventually going to be something you're going to have to move to, right? So if you have already gone through the pain and effort of getting to Windows 10, and you've got a few things that you can work through, maybe that's the way to go. Otherwise, you know, are you going to wait until you get a new printer? That's a possibility, right? If your old printer is not the one that is compatible with Windows 10, you can do that. If you maybe move on to a point where you don't need that printer as well, I guess. But if it's just a few minor inconveniences, and of course, that's all relative, right? Because if you're, you know, what's minor to me may not be to you. Working through those would probably be keep you from having to do this again at some point in the future. So, yes, I looked it up. It does say you have 30 days to change your mind and go back. And if you do that, you'll go into the update and security section in your control panel. And in there, there is a recovery option where you can go back to Windows 7 or Windows 8.1, depending on which version you had before. Not, it has to be that version. So,
okay.
But there is a method to go back.
Right. And so, Scott, eventually it's something you're going to need to do. But I would, you know, consider this the wake-up call, I guess.
Well, which is terrible, right, that we're forcing, or that Microsoft is forcing people down this road. But I think they've seen in previous versions, especially with Windows XP, how long people drug their feet to move on to the next version. It took forever. In fact, I'm still aware of Windows XP installations out there, even though they're not supported anymore. But I think they're trying to avoid that. I think they're trying to keep people from dragging that out so long that Microsoft is required to keep maintaining patches for 7 and 8. And I think they just learned from previous experience and are hoping to make it better. But at the same time, they're really making a lot of people angry. I know on the one of the more recent updates, a recommended update from Microsoft, actually generates a full screen. It's purple and says you need to upgrade to Windows 10. So they're not being subtle about it anymore.
Yeah, I kind of wish that they would do it easier, although I completely sympathize with Microsoft on this. It's really just better, and no offense to anybody out there that doesn't want to upgrade. It's just better to upgrade to the newest version of anything because it's safer. And it's generally more compatible with newer devices. But it is kind of a drag. It sometimes renders old equipment useless or out of date, and that's a problem. But, you know, if you look at certainly with iOS phones, I know that this is the case, and with Android phones, you know, we do system updates all the time on our mobile devices, and we hardly ever think about it, for the most part, most of us. And I think desktops, just like you said, have to get to that point just to stay current for security purposes. I mean, it would be different if you never used your computer on the internet or never used it for, you know, banking or things like that. But, you know, there aren't too many computers out there that aren't used for internet and or banking or buying online and have your credit card or whatever it is. So it's just better to stay up to date, I think.
You know, if they didn't make such gigantic leaps in the user interface, I think that's where people get frustrated, is they don't like it, or they get used to the way, one way of doing something. They upgrade and now everything's gone, or, you know, we're missing, or
it's
in a different place, and it's difficult and it's frustrating, and I completely understand that sentiment. There was a time where I refused to use Windows 8 because of you know, the lack of the start button, and because of the way everything was in tiles, and
I did not, man,
that was terrible.
And then you clicked the tile and it wasn't actually taking you to Internet Explorer, it was taking you to an app that was kind of like Internet Explorer, it was horrible.
And so, you know, on the comparisons to the phone, where those updates are so much smaller and incremental, you know, maybe they could learn a thing or two from that. But, of course, obviously your laptop and your desktop
do
a lot more than your phone.
Although
does,
I will
right?
say Apple learned that from themselves with the mobile operating system updates. And now they basically update their desktop operating system every year as well. And because of that, it's slightly more incremental. They incorporate lots of new stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's not such a big change that, like, in 2 years or 2.5 years, this is a new thing with a completely new design. You have to relearn that. I think they learned that from themselves, and I do think that is the way to go.
You know, the Windows interface is such – they change it so dramatically that I can look – at the Windows interface, provided you didn't do a lot of customization to it. And I can say, yeah, that's Windows 10. Yeah, that's Windows 8. Yeah, that's Windows 7. And I've only had
which works great if it's a car, but not so much if it's an operating system.
And I've only had my Mac for, I think, 2 years, but I couldn't, you know, I couldn't just look at the screen and say, I know what version of the operating system you're running on. Or the same thing with my phone. I think there's just the jumps are too great.
Yeah, and I think probably it is the user interface that really throws people off in the updated versions of Windows. And so I guess the super long answer to your question is, if you can at all possible stay with the new version, that's what we would recommend. But it looks like there is a way out of your dilemma if necessary.
And like I said, use it as kind of the little shot across the bow that you might be looking for a new printer coming down the road. Mm-hmm. Or, HP has kind of forsook people so far, right? They've just said, hey, we're not going to really be updating many more drivers for this stuff. It's just, it is what it is.
Well, you know, there's at some point it becomes, there's a cost to that, to keep all of that old stuff up to date and to bring it along and put up with the, while the driver might be updated, there's some other special situations where it doesn't quite work, and so you've got to dedicate resources and man hours to fixing that, and they just at some point have to stop putting money into small niche issues because there are fewer people who are running into those, and just say, yeah, we're not doing that anymore.
I just see the legions of listeners out there shaking their fists right now. They're just they don't like that, and I don't like that either. But you know, the fact is, it's the way things are right now, and we're just going to move on.
Or it's just the way things have been, and increasingly going the way they're going to be.
The alternative is write your own operating system, right?
Yeah. Or don't worry when your identity gets stolen.
That too, right? You bet.
I just, you know, I'm just trying to get excited about the upcoming anniversary edition of Windows 10. I guess I don't know.
You're excited about it?
No, I'm trying to get excited about it.
Oh, you're trying to get excited.
I didn't even know that was a thing. Is that a real thing?
It's a real thing, yeah. Yeah, it is.
Couldn't they just release a new version? I think that'd be the better idea.
You got to have cake. You got to celebrate a little bit.
I guess so.
You know, why not? Anyway, give us a call if you'd like, 800-524-3604, and ask your questions if you have any today. Don't be shy. Facebook.com/techradio. I posted a list of apps for type A personalities out there. It's I found that I actually use a couple of them, and it's not because I don't think I'm type A. I think I'm a very reasonable person, and I'm not built that way, but I put a list out there anyway because there are some good apps in there. Not that I would use them all, but you know, like you say, not one size fits all. So facebook.com/techradio, list of apps, and while you're there, be sure to like the page if you haven't done that before, and leave us a comment. We'd love to hear comments and questions on our Facebook page as well, facebook.com/techradio. Of course, our Twitter handle at SDPB and our email address midday@sdpb.org. Well, sad news this morning. When I got up this morning listening to NPR, I learned about a 40-year-old software developer or software company owner out of Canton, Ohio, that was killed in a collision in Florida with a tractor trailer, and he had his Tesla on autopilot mode, which is, I guess, something you can do with a Tesla. There's a warning when you do that says, hey, you know, this is...
Keep your hands on the wheel.
This is driver assist, keep your hands on the wheel, but it looks like the early reports are that he was maybe perhaps watching a movie on the console of the car.
Yeah, that's not shown or proven yet, but that is the preliminary stuff. Yes.
So in effect, and this is the quote from what Tesla said, neither autopilot nor the driver noticed the white side of a tractor trailer against a brightly lit sky. So the brake was not applied. So there's a camera system in these cars, and there's radar in these cars, correct?
I don't believe it's radar.
It's not radar yet. So a camera system in the car, and then, of course, your own heads-up display. You're supposed to be watching what's going on. Mm-hmm. Your user-based heads-up display.
You mean vision?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, you're supposed to be monitoring what's going on and then take corrective action. Neither one of those things happened. And it's, of course, there's the knee-jerk reaction from people about, you know, recalls and things like that, or updates to the software. Is it more of a learning thing in this tragedy, or should Tesla now be pulling back on some of the technology that they've been deploying?
Well, you know, that was actually one of the first things I thought of. It's tragic incident, and you hate to have anything happen that ends up in the end result becomes a death. but they're going to learn so much from this particular incident about where the flaws are and where the shortcomings are, and they'll be able to make modifications to that to hopefully make things better in the future. It's terrible that somebody had to die to learn this stuff, but you know, it will make the product better in the long run. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I there's a lot of talk out there, and you know, I mean, first off, you know, this guy was had a family, and he was, just 40. So it's terrible. Anybody that dies is terrible. Somebody, the family, we really feel bad for them. But thinking that this is some autopilot cars are going to be somehow different than cars piloted by people, I think is way too much of a stretch for anybody out there. There's way too many people panicking about autopilot cars out there, even though there are literally, I don't know how many there are. There's tons of them out there right now, and this is the first accident that's caused a fatality. I mean, fatalities happen all the time with cars, unfortunately. I just don't think it's out of the ordinary for normal driving.
I read some statistics yesterday, and I'm paraphrasing here, but I think they said that for the average human-driven car, which is weird that we can say that now, for the average human-driven car, there's a fatality per every 90 million miles driven, and that the Tesla vehicles on automatic or autopilot have actually gone 130 million before there was a fatality. So, you know, it doesn't make it any better. It doesn't make this not a terrible situation, but it does show that there's at least, you know, some good in that product, and if we can make it better, maybe we can extend that 90 million out to be 3 or 4 or 5 times that.
It's statistically, it was bound to happen,
of course,
sooner or later. This is just the first case of it. Mm-hmm. And
you know, you mentioned it right off the top. You know, two things. First off, this feature, the auto drive feature, is in beta. So, you know, it's not an officially, it's an official software feature of the Tesla, but it's not a selling point. It's just a beta feature right now. And second, they do warn you that you need to act like a driver of the car. Now, we don't know that he wasn't, or we don't know the details on that, but and, you know, you can make mistakes and so can the car, and those are just going to happen. But I hope that this tells all of the other Tesla drivers out there and anybody else that has an autopilot car is like, hey, you know, this isn't sleepy time. You know, we're not to that point yet. You know, you still have to pay attention.
Yeah. A separate issue from this is the people that are purposefully doing bad things or doing dangerous things on autopilot. And there's plenty of examples of that if you go to YouTube. Mm. Right. And you can see people doing things they're clearly not supposed to be doing while the car is on autopilot. Mm-hmm. How much does that factor into what Tesla needs to, I guess, safeguard for? I mean, it's kind of like the putting the warning that caution, this coffee is hot, on a cup of coffee that you just bought.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you say you can find those videos online. You absolutely can. You can also find videos online of people driving regular cars in a completely ridiculous manner.
Yes, yeah.
So, nothing new under the sun there. People can be stupid and will be if given the opportunity. Not that that was the case here, but I don't know that that changes anything.
Yeah, you know, the instructions do say that you need to continue to look out the window. You need to continue to keep your hands on the wheel. You know, you're really kind of getting away from everything that the autopilot is supposed to do. But until this technology is perfected, which can it ever really be perfected, they want you to be paying attention and ready to hit the brakes when necessary.
I don't know if it ever can be completely perfected, but it certainly seems to be making leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
Even in the last several years, it's gone much farther than I've expected, especially the driver assist part of this equation, which is probably a whole separate deal, but the assist in parking, in RVs, keeping the large vehicles going down the interstate, you know, in high winds, and just so beyond some of the safety features, The warning features, the features that just help you operate that vehicle, seem to really be coming along, and it's wonderful, and I hope that this is certainly a bump in the road, but it's that it turns into sort of a learning experience, and we can all move on, because I really am an advocate of safer driving for everyone. Absolutely. It is time for another break. We need to take a quick one. When we come back, we'll talk about some battery recalls, Android, and Google's doing some great things, burying some cables. So we'll talk about all that coming up after this break. And welcome back to the third segment of Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. We have Joel Brovelite and Amos Aesop here in the studio to take your tech questions and comments. Just a comment from Mike while we were off the air there. He says, Windows 10 broke my music recording software. As a musician, I kind of need that. So another good reason, I guess, to roll that back and maybe wait for a software update there, depending on what he's using.
And I mentioned this off air. That's one of those things. If you rely on your computer for work, and especially if you have a very specific software program that you use, you always want to check that before you update, because Microsoft will not do that for you, unfortunately.
Testing is probably something that you do at work every day.
Yeah, testing all the time. And you know, one of the things you can do there is rather, you don't even need to test it, really. You make sure first that you go and find out if it's officially supported. Find the software and the hardware that you want to use with that, and see if it's been updated. And that way, if something does go wrong, you at least have some recourse. You have somebody to call, somebody to turn to.
Sure. Just have a couple little news things to pass along for folks. One is a safety recall. HP batteries, and there are a couple other companies that are kind of involved in that. But if you have an HP laptop, you may want to go to HP's website or find some sort of consumer alerts website that lists the batteries and the battery types that you have, and see if yours is on that list. I've seen several user reactions to this from. Mine gets really hot. I added a fan I completely took my laptop apart and threw it away because I was so disgusted with it too. You know, I really don't use the battery that much. I always plug it in. So I took the battery out and everything works great.
Wow.
So yeah, there's a bunch of different reactions to that. But, you know, maybe that's one way of avoiding a fire right off the bat is if you just use it at home all the time and you keep it plugged in, maybe just pop that battery out. If your cable doesn't plug into the battery, if it's one of those models, maybe you can go without the battery for a while and until you see if you're in with that. Yeah, get it replaced or see if you're in that update. But it's one of those things that we live with the, you know, whether it's a lithium ion cell or something else that there's always that possibility that something could possibly go wrong. Be sure to check for that. You guys use Evernote? Note taking?
I have used it from time to time. I don't currently use it.
Yeah, there's a pricing scheme that they've announced that is upsetting some folks, and people are wondering what alternatives are. Of course, OneNote and Google's got a oddly named Keep product that you know, and you get some free online storage that goes along with that. And I think I'm gonna put a poll out on our Facebook page, asking what people use for note taking, and see if people are gonna be moving and soliciting comments. See if people are gonna be moving away from Evernote or looking for alternatives, I guess, free or otherwise, to that, because it seems like the pricing is getting up there in the range of some Microsoft pricing, where you get a whole lot of other tools for the same amount of money or less. So just curious about that. Amos, you wanted to talk a little bit about a patent that Apple just applied for.
Well, actually, it was granted.
Granted.
Apple actually patented a concert camera blocker. And so what that is supposed to do is keep you from recording things that event organizers would rather you didn't record. And the current method for that would be to place a an infrared emitter that would send special signals infraredly to the camera or to the phone for a couple of things. One, it could shut the phone or the camera off so that you can't record or take pictures of that item. But two, there was another option they were showing, whereas it could actually send information to the phone such that if you were looking at something in maybe a museum, you could hold it up to your phone. Your phone would then pull information from the web and give you an overlay with more information about whatever that happens to be. Pretty interesting. Kind of a neat augmented reality kind of method for looking at things. You know, requires them to have thought about it ahead of time and put that IR emitter there. The other thing, too, is people are saying, well, this will be defeated pretty easily by just putting an IR filter over the camera lens or other methods to keep the phone from seeing that IR signal. So I'm sure they'll take it farther if this actually ends up being something where, you know, concert venues don't want you recording the audio or the video. This is the first step in that direction.
Many don't. And yeah. It's
most. And there's a lot of places that say, you know, no photography, no whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult to do when everybody's got a camera in their pocket these days.
You been to a concert lately, Amos?
It's been a little while for me.
Joel?
Yes.
You've seen the sea of phones.
Of course.
Well, it's replaced
in front
the lighters.
Of you.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, that too. I did go to one where somebody had, I believe it was an iPad Pro that they were recording with, which is basically like holding a wheel cover, or, you know, something very large up in
hubcap
front of you.
A hubcap in front of you.
A lunch tray.
Right. Yes, definitely a lunch tray. And it's distracting. It's a lot of light, and it can be frustrating.
Yes.
In many ways, other than just recording of the copyrighted material.
Do people just really not realize that they're disturbing other people's concert?
They do.
So this patent is an attempt, and I'm assuming it's only going to work on Apple devices.
Well, and if it works on other devices, then I assume Apple will get royalties for it, should they choose to license the patent.
Well, I tell you what, if I was an artist and I wanted to, you know, make sure that people were going to my concert and not selling my footage and this, that, and the other thing, I'd be very interested in this feature. I think a lot of artists and museums and I think...
Movie theaters?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if anybody was going to get mad about this, you have to really look at why somebody would implement this in the first place. I mean, it's just protecting their intellectual property. I mean, Apple facilitates that. I think more power to them. That's what I would expect. Nobody should be able to go into a concert and expect to be able to record and get all huffy that they can't pirate the movie in the movie theater or whatever it is.
I could see this expanding out into maybe there's an IR emitter put into on your lapel if you're a celebrity, so that
sure.
People who have iPhones aren't taking
That's
pictures of you,
idea.
You know, paparazzi
That's
style,
a good idea.
That sort of stuff.
I'd be okay with that too.
You know, there's always been the idea or the thought that maybe we put in a jammer at the local movie theater so that people's phones don't go off while we're watching a movie. And there's obviously some safety implications with that. But, you know, there are going to be other places that people may put those IR emitters to keep people from taking pictures. And movie theater, actually, a great example, where people might get frustrated because they don't understand why their phone's not working.
Absolutely. They've announced these are for the Android folks, I guess, in the room, and that's Amos and I. You still got the Edge?
I do. Well, I do, and I just dropped it, cracked the screen. I'm so embarrassed.
Oh, man, look at that.
Yeah. That's my first time in 20 years of having a cell phone that I've ever broken a screen or any portion of it.
Wow.
It's embarrassing. Yeah.
So
not if it's first in 20 years. I think you're doing pretty well.
Yeah, hats off to you. You're very careful. Not a drop in the toilet or anything, huh?
Never, no.
Wow, that's astounding. So they have announced Android N was the next version of the operating system for Android, and they finally came out after everybody guessed. And here's the thing: there was a contest, of course, mm-hmm. to name what the N was going to be.
Well, we should explain why is it N? Why the What are we talking about?
Does it just progress in the alphabet?
Well, yep, on the alphabet. The Android operating systems, like we were talking about before, have iterations, and each one is the next letter in the alphabet. Today, a lot of phones are either on Kit Kat, Lollipop, Marshmallow, and then N is coming up, and so that's where you pick.
So they have this contest, and so that they don't fall into the British government problem of name the tugboat. You remember that? So the public named the Her Majesty's ship. They named it Bodie McBoatface. Yeah. And of course they didn't, you know, they didn't allow that to happen. It's now called, you know, Her Majesty's something or other, very, very posh and elegant. They put a clause in it that said, yeah, but we're going to use common sense and it has to fit certain things. Anyway, it's going to be called Nougat.
Nougat.
Yeah.
It's always something usually sweet. Yep. Sometimes it is, you know, something that's a brand name, like Kit Kat was for a K. And other times it's generic, like Marshmallow or Lollipop or, you know. And then there's actually predictions out there on the web, too, where you can see people who have gone through the entire list of the alphabet and said, here's what I think it's going to be all the way through, you know, through Z. And
so O is next. What could O be that's a sweet treat?
Who knows?
I guess we'll have to start working on that.
Right, right.
Oreo.
Oreo is one that was guessed, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, beyond the name, there are some really notable things about this upgrade that's good news for folks like us. Notably, some really great security upgrades. They're finally a protocol called Daydream for virtual reality. So that's going to be as a part of this, which will be really good. They're going to get rid of that stage fright problem. And if you remember what that is, that's a Trojan or a virus delivered to the phone in an MMS message. Mm-hmm. Then it would auto-open that, and then that would, of course, cause havoc. So they're gonna nip that in the bud and be able to apply security updates seamlessly without rebooting. And when they do boot, they've got this thing called Direct Boot. And what it does is if you're sleeping and your phone does a security update, right now, to be able to get your phone back running, you have to put your PIN number in or you have to swipe your thing. Mm-hmm. And you can't really do that when you're sleeping and you miss your alarm or your turn-on function of your app or whatever. Now it will direct boot. It'll just go ahead, apply the security update, boot your phone, but still start that phone back in the mode so that, you know, none of your stuff doesn't work in the morning.
Sure, yeah, because so, we'll end up with the same problem as Windows 10.
Yeah, exactly. So some really good things about Nougat, besides the fact that it's making me hungry right now. That's a really good thing. Want to mention as the closing music begins, coming up later this afternoon, Science Friday, algorithms are used to predict the behaviors of certain groups of people, including shoppers, drivers, office workers. In several states, parole boards employ this type of predictive data to determine high-risk offenders who may commit another crime once they're released. There's a couple of experts there, some senior science reporters, discussed the case in the Wisconsin Supreme Court that challenges the legality of these algorithms. Stay tuned to SDPB Radio this afternoon for Science Friday and hear that really great segment. I want to thank our guest today, Joel Brovelite. Thanks for bringing your toys in, Joel. We appreciate seeing and hearing about those. And Amos Aesop, of course, thank you for all your kind words and everything great. Next Tech Radio is coming up July 15th. So 2 weeks from today, everybody have a safe 4th of July weekend and celebrate your Independence Day in a great way. And we'll see you on the 15th.